Hello and welcome behind the marquee, the podcast where we talk about what's going on within our art house community in Ann Arbor, Michigan and across the country. My name is Nick Aldrink and I'm the programming and media coordinator for the Michigan State Theater. It is good to be back after one of the podcast's famous hiatuses. I just had to take a little break as we got things ready for the Michigan and State Theater reopening. A lot of exciting stuff happening there, but I'll talk a little bit more about that at the end of the episode. Because coming up here, you will hear a virtual Q&A that I had with Michigan author Bonnie Jo Campbell, screenwriter, director Harula Rose, and producer David Messias of the film Once Upon a River that is now playing in our virtual movie palace. As you will hear us talk a lot about, Bonnie Jo Campbell is the author of the novel Once Upon a River, takes place in Michigan. It is a very terrific novel. I suggest you read it and see the film. It will be available in our movie palace virtually for quite a while, and a real treat, especially to read in kind of our cool weather that we're settling into right now. The film is like this American Midwestern gothic tale, and the film was honestly and faithfully adapted in such a beautiful way. In this conversation, you'll hear the respect that Bonnie Jo and Harula had for each other and how this positive relationship affected the production of this film, not just between those two, but with the entire team around. David was in this as well. And it was just a relief, honestly, because, you know, walking into a conversation with the original author and the adapting screenwriter, you just don't typically hear stories of them getting along. That's just what, that's just the easiest way to say it. So I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Here's the conversation with Bonnie Jo Campbell, Harula Rose, and David Messias.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there probably are.
So, we're on Facebook now. We have about 10 people that are joining us and they're hopping on. So hello, everybody. Hello, Facebook. Thank you for joining our Q&A. I am joined by author Bonnie Jo Campbell, Harula Rose, writer and director of Once Upon a River. That would be Bonnie's book. And then producer David Messias. So thank you so much for you three for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Nick.
I would just like, as we were just talking about, this film is playing in our virtual cinema. And mm-hmm. as I always say during, as we've done these Q&As, it's a silver lining of there's just us being in quarantine and us being in isolation, that having this virtual cinema option, I've gotten the chance to, it's been a real treat talking with producers and directors and writers such as yourselves. So thank you so much for giving me your time to discuss your terrific film.
Oh, we're happy to do it. Thanks so much for having the movie there.
Yeah, well, it's fun to see your theater, though, where it'd be great to be there, wouldn't it?
Exactly. It would. Yeah, this is, I'm not actually in the theater. You'll see me disappear into the backdrop every once in a while.
Oh, yeah.
But
very nostalgic for theaters, though, for sure.
Yeah.
Wow.
So as we begin this conversation, if you've ever been to a Q&A, a film Q&A at the Michigan before, this usually works. I start off with a few questions, kind of get the ball rolling. But at any point, leave your questions in the comment section. I'll be looking at them there, and I will sprinkle them in into our conversation with the group here. So welcome everybody that are hopping on right now. I want to talk about, Bonnie, this is your first adaptation of your work. Is that right?
There have been some fun things that have been done with short stories, but you know, for a novel, yeah, this is the first thing. And wow, what a great thing for a first time, you know, you hear all these stories about how much you're going to hate what they do with your book, you know, those evil Hollywood people, you know, they're going to do terrible things to your book. They're going to sell it to, you know, they're going to sell it to the wrong people who are going to change it. And it's like, no, it's fabulous. Harula did everything fabulous that could be done with this story.
That's what I found. That's what gave me the most joy, is that we started the conversation with you, Bonnie, and then you're like, why doesn't Harula and David join us? I'm like, yeah, more the merrier. Let's get them in here. That gave me joy that you have such a great relationship with the people behind the adaptation of your work. Can you tell us when you first found that there were people that wanted to make Once Upon a River into a film. Can you tell us what it was a bit about what it was like giving your work to someone else and the conversations you had with Harula and David that gave you confidence for them to do it justice?
Yeah, well, I mean, Harula's a Midwestern gal, and she and I went to University of Chicago, which is a place we should neither one of us should have gone. So we knew that we were misfits, and we were together in that. And Harula said she wanted to make, you know, I'd had some interest in making a movie of this before, and it was by a man who was kind of famous and made movies that I didn't love, but then Harula was interested, and we went to my grandparents' cottage on the St. Joe River, and we had a beer, and it was cold, and we sat outside, and she seemed to have some good ideas, and we said, yeah, let's do it.
Harula, is that how did you find the project yourself?
Yeah, that's the funny part about the University of Chicago thing was it was in the Alumni Magazine, which I don't look at all the time, but this time I saw it and I read this blurb, and there was something about the photograph of Bonnie and the expression in her eyes and the summary of what it was, where I already kind of instinctively was like, oh, I would love to tell that story. I think it sounds like something that feels like a character I would love, and that it was very cinematic. And so, I just really wanted to read it, and then I read it twice in a weekend, and then reached out to Bonnie, and then it became very like clear that it felt like a good combination of personalities, and like we saw it the same way, and you know, it was pretty cool. I feel very lucky for the whole thing.
In scouting and doing the pre-production of this film, I want to know about the location that you chose for the Stark River. Bonnie, in your book, the Stark is, and the Kalamazoo River as well, they're as strong of characters as any of the people that Margot meets along her journey. So while you were looking for the location for the Stark River, what was the criteria you were looking for that you had to see in order to settle on a shooting location, if that makes sense?
Well, it just had to feel like it was the Midwest mostly. I wanted to stay true to Bonnie's book. It already felt somewhat like a betrayal that we weren't shooting actually in Michigan. We shot right at the border of Illinois and Wisconsin, and in a town and outside of a town called Antioch, Illinois. And the area is, it's called the Chain of Lakes State Park. And then, while I was editing, I did a few pickup shots where it's just Margot by the river up in Woodstock in New York. And it just had to feel like a magical place in a sense, like you could feel the nature evolving around her. It was this time of year actually, and it was getting colder by the hour, very unpredictable weather, the leaves were changing, and it just felt like that was a nice parallel to what she's going through internally as a character and how she's changing and maturing as well. So it just felt like the way Bonnie wrote it just felt like you had to make sure that the character and her inhabiting that space was going to be a huge part of the storytelling. And finding that area specifically, Antioch, was my dad actually. He was like, you know, there's this place up at the top of the state that's really beautiful and feels like it could still pass for the 70s in this quaint type small town way. So that was the biggest thing.
Yeah, and they ended up having everything from the 70s that Harula needed. I mean, they were able to find like cop cars from the 70s, and all kinds of automobiles and the furniture. I mean, it was awesome. It was, I mean, I'm sure there's places in Michigan, but you know, Michigan doesn't have those film credits. You know, they dropped the ball, man.
Bonnie, in creating the Stark River, which is a fictional tributary off the Kalamazoo River, what was your decision in creating a fictional setting for the novel and not, it's based on, did I read right? It's actually, your inspiration was the St. Joe River?
Well, I love the St. Joe River because I kind of grew up, I kind of hung out there as a kid for weeks on end. But that's a big, at least at the point at which I'm familiar with the St. Joe, it's a big river, you know, and I was interested in a smaller river. And So the Kalamazoo is fairly small. But yeah, I mean, it was fun to make up. I wanted to invent a town so we could have a company town. And I knew if I made a real river and tried to put a company town on it, I'd get in trouble. And there weren't any of the, there was no river that was really going to flow into the Kalamazoo that was going to fit the bill. But it's mm-hmm. funny because somebody came to interview me from somewhere, I don't, maybe from east side of the state. And they drove to see me in Kalamazoo, but they tried to find the Stark River on the way because it's in the map, you know, there's a yeah. map in the front of the book. So this poor guy is like driving all over the state trying to find this fictional river. It was crazy.
So can you tell us a little bit about Kennedy? Is it De La Serna? Is that how you say her last name? How did you find her?
Well, she's sort of a miracle. David, do you remember when I was calling you kind of freaking out that we didn't have a lead? Because we
I
had
sure do.
We had money in the bank. We had the rest of the cast pretty much lined up. We had, you know, it was just time pressing on us, the weather, all of these things. And yeah, it was, she's just a find. She was a miracle. We manifested that, honestly. She came mm-hmm. very 11th hour. And what well, do you remember it, about that, David?
Was, I feel like it, I'm PTSD just it, thinking it, isn't, didn't Grace find her through some website?
Jules did. Yeah, Jules
did, right. Okay.
She was putting up, Jules was, we all had many hats, you know, on an independent film, everyone's got like four roles. Yeah. And so Jules was like a production assistant, a casting assistant, helping with a million things, finding the boat, finding, you know, like figuring out how to get us dead animals. I mean, and so she was the one that was like, I'm just going to type it into like backstage.com and all these websites. Meanwhile, I like have my head in a pillow in like utter despair because I'm like, this isn't going to happen. What a cruel world. And then she sent in a tape and I was okay. like, oh, that one.
But hold on, finish the story about like, then you like basically flew to New York like the next day.
So Kennedy thought
because
we
it was that it was.
Yeah,
it was like it was that close to the bone where, like, you know, Perula was just kind of like, okay, I think she could be the one. I'm getting on a plane and just kind of went immediately. And I'm sure it freaked Kennedy out, but
it kind of did. And then I found out later that it was her birthday and she was supposed to have gone to Hawaii that day, and she stayed behind to do this like camera test with us. And that I thought was very admirable about her work ethic, and just she's so amazing. And I feel like she's going to have a great career. I do have people asking me about if she has representation and stuff, and it's kind of mm-hmm. fun. I'm like, I hope she gets to do everything.
This was her first and only credit on IMDb right now. Was this her first feature?
Yes, her first anything, really. She had been at an acting conservatory in New York, and so she had been training in terms of doing theatrical productions and stuff in school, but this was her first time like really being on set and really doing something. And I remember the feeling I had when I saw her tape and I saw this thing, and I could just see what was going on underneath her eyes, and she would be somebody who could carry the film. Like, she has a kind of light going on within her that, even though Margot goes through all of this dark stuff, she keeps you there. Like, there's still an element of hope going on. And then she also, the first day that she got there at like 5 a.m, I was up and I look outside and there she is down by the water, like poking around and getting in a canoe. I was like, oh, I knew it.
And she is in every scene. Is that right, Harula?
She is. Yeah.
Somebody pointed out to me, that's not normal that there's an actor who's in every scene in a movie usually.
Yeah.
And did she know how to shoot and canoe and everything like that already by the, when you?
She joined a shooting range, and then I took her to meet our armorer. We had to have, like, you know, someone on set to make sure we were shooting safely, you know, blanks and whatnot. So I took her to meet him and have like target practice, the way Bonnie took me to have target practice earlier on too, when I was writing the script. So that was a little bit of a round that we did. Bonnie took me, I took Kennedy, and then she also grew up on some farms, and so she was very comfortable with the outdoors, which was extremely helpful.
Yeah, Bonnie It's one of the very first shots of the movie. We see the Annie Oakley book. I really want to know, Bonnie, what's Annie Oakley's role in your life personally? Because I learned so much. It just seems like you had her biography forward and backward in the story, the amount as she shows up. So I want to, is Annie Oakley an idol of yours or a personal fascination of yours as it is to Margot?
Well, I am very interested in Annie Oakley. Unfortunately, I mean, there's some biographies of Annie Oakley, but when a person becomes too famous and their biography has been crystallized, it's very hard to get behind that biography to anything more specific. I mean, I would love to see a real exploration of Annie Oakley's life that was not the cut and dried story. And the reason that story happened is because she was in the wild, you know, the Wild West show. So
yeah.
they wanted to create a persona. And so she has a very petrified story, but I'm interested in her. And the whole time I was writing Once Upon a River, I have a bunch of circus posters. I used to travel with the circus. And so I have this circus poster for the Annie Oakley show. And so, you know, I was just watching that the whole time. And I just love to look at photographs of Annie Oakley. Her eyes are so haunting. Annie Oakley's eyes, if you look at them, they're not what you think. I mean, if you're used to the rootin' tootin' cowgirl, but when you look in her face, it's something different. And so, yeah, she's important to me. And then I just thought, you know, what if somebody does shoot that well? You know, what's a woman who can shoot? I mean, the great thing about shooting is there's no reason a woman and women and men don't shoot equally well. So it's a kind of a wonderful sport that way. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I've read a lot about Annie Oakley. I look at her. I do think about her a lot. So I'm glad my character got to it.
All right. Looking at questions here. Someone like to know the character, what was the decision behind further characterizing Margot's Native American ancestry?
Yeah, you know, Harula and I had a great conversation about this because I didn't really do much with it because I just have a gentle suggestion in the book that she might be Native American. Mm-hmm. And then Harula decided that that element seemed very important. So I was a little bit nervous about it. You know, we have to worry about appropriation. And I think I was really impressed how Harula handled it and the lengths she went to make sure that it really worked and was really respectful. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say that I just took it as a given in the book when it's mentioned that that she has this native blood and that she is sort of kind of like othered in the community and like is sort of an outcast. And since film is such a visual medium and it's such a subjective story and we're with her, like we said, the whole time, I just wanted people to be reminded that this is somebody who wasn't necessarily like at home in that world of Murrayville. And it just made sense to sort of lean into it. And also because I like having the talent that we got with Tatanka and Ajuak, who's also written to be of Native descent in the book. Like I wanted to explore that in terms of her own getting to know herself on a level of, yes, she's a girl at the beginning who almost like has no voice. And then by the end, she's like really discovered her own identity as a woman and more confident and she can speak up for herself, but also she's more curious about really finding out where she came from. And I really liked leaning into it and making sure that we were being sensitive about it and having those conversations with the cast and Heather, who was one of our producers also.
Looking at, let's see, this is very similar to a conversation we were having before we started the recording, actually, the omissions that were from the novel, that were made for the film. Can you tell us a little, you mentioned the phrase that there, you had to kill a lot of your darlings within the story, Harula. And I'm wondering what there's the relationship with Brian that isn't quite as explored, though. I think I read an interview that they were scenes shot that were one major scene in particular. I don't know how much we want to go into details of Bonnie's book. I want people to see.
I mean, I don't want to ruin the book for people who haven't read it, but I mean, there, you know, with any adaptation, you have to figure out how to collapse time and make it. I mean, this book takes place over a couple of years, so how do you tell this story in 90 minutes? And I wanted to make sure Bonnie was okay with the script. It would have felt really weird to not share it with her the way it would be shot. So I wanted to get it to a place where it was as close to the shooting script as possible, which was pretty much what you read, actually. I think Bonnie and David read various drafts along the way. And each time we were always bummed. Like I hated losing Michael. Yeah. I hated losing some of the stuff with Brian and Paul. I hated the part where I had to lose her going back to home only to leave again. But in a film, you kind of have to keep moving people forward. Otherwise, it just feels like kind of weird. Even when you're watching a frame and she's going from left to right, like into the future, it always was like you have to make sure you're continuing to move the story forward. And so Michael felt like he reiterated a point that we already know about her, that she doesn't fit in. She's kind of feral. There's these qualities that don't make sense for her in terms of traditional life as a woman. And it was the same with Brian and Paul. There was a lot of stuff that had to go just in order to keep it moving. And I was sad. I don't know. Even in the edit, I was sad because we did shoot a couple of scenes that didn't make it into the final film, but it just felt extraneous. And I could tell in certain screenings where I was losing people's energy in a sense. And it was nothing to do with the actors. It was just that, like, it felt like, okay, this section we need to get to this part next sooner. I mean, what would you say about that, David? You read the various drafts.
It was tough. I mean, I read the novel, you know, basically right pretty much when you did. You read it and you called me and were like, go get this book, read it immediately. I'm flipping out. And I did, and I flipped out too. It's a great book, Bonnie. and you know, and yeah, the cinematic qualities were really obvious. But you know, I was so I loved the book so much that, you know, it was sort of like when these scripts would come in, and then all of a sudden, you know, a character like Michael who I loved and you know, related to a little bit when, you know, when he had to go. I think that was the toughest one for me. But I think the choices that Hirula had to make to you know, for the pacing of the film, and again, you know, yeah, like the point that she made about sort of, you know, basically saying something that's already been established, you know, and when time is an issue and pacing is an issue, then, you know, those are some of the hard decisions you have to make. So, but, you know, I came around eventually.
Yeah, I did too. I have to say, like, at first I just thought, how could this be out of the, you know, how could this be out of the story and still have it? I mean, the amazing thing for me is that what the emotional impact, what I hope is the emotional impact of the book, that actually feels to me, what happens in the movie feels like the same emotional impact, but with all these choices that, you know, and that seems amazing to me, given that Hirula had to make all these hard choices about what to leave out. It just seems, and it's interesting. I mean, I learned a lot about filmmaking because I know that with a book, I revise and revise and revise and cut things out and revise. And I just thought, oh, well, people making films, they've just made that film. They knew what they wanted to make. They shot it, and then it was done. But I learned that Hirula was still making important content decisions in the editing, you know, of the film. And I think one of the most important things that I learned was that when she showed the film, the early drafts of the film to people at a festival in Poland, I think Hirula said,
yeah, that was the first one.
Important thing was to get more quickly, to get Margot to smoke more quickly. And really for the movie, I mean, that is, the movie is almost a romance between Margot and Smoke. It's almost a love story between them. And that's different from the book, but absolutely thrilling and makes absolute sense.
So what was, you said, Hirula, you sent pages to Bonnie. Did you have a creative partnership in here? What was your communication like while you're writing the script?
Oh, not very much. You know, I kind of told Hirula, like, I don't know anything about the movies. I can't do anything. Maybe some dialogue. Maybe I can do dialogue. That's it. And so it was, I really had fun in the parts where the dialogue is exactly like it is from the book. I mean, that gave me this little thrill, like, oh, she left it exactly the same. It must be.
I love that dialogue. They have such good lines, especially the smoke and fishbone.
Especially the smoke and fishbone.
My favorite.
Yeah. And, but I mean, it was fun to see it. And again, every time I saw the script, it was like, there's not enough here. You know, there's too much missing. How could it happen? But you know, it's incredible what Harula did with the character. I don't have to say a lot of stuff about Kennedy. I don't have to say a lot of stuff about Margot, because there she is on the screen with her eyes showing how hurt she feels or how happy she feels. And I don't have to justify it with a lot of words. So, I mean, it just seemed like it worked so well. And I knew that, you know, I felt pain when I watched things go away, and then it was okay. Mm-hmm. You know, so just the way it should be. But I didn't help Harula very much. I'll tell you the one thing I had to help Harula with, though. Those people who sent her, you know, you have to get nature clips from like a service. Those people sold her. They're evil, Harula. They sold Harula instead of where it was supposed to be a heronry. They sold her wood storks. So it was like
it was an amazing email. I should print that out and put it on my fridge, because it was like, you know, you hear all these stories about like the relationship with the novelist and how it can be very touchy and sensitive and all that, and how they can be a disaster. And I just like my email from Bonnie was always like, I just have these two comments. One is about the birds. And one is It was so funny. I just like, I wanted to like hug your email. It was.
But that,
oh my God! Well, seeing how, I mean, the amazing thing is, you know, it's really hard to write a book. It takes so much work. But you know, to make a movie, you know, Harula had to like had this work that involved getting, you know, 30 people to do her bidding. You know, all at, well, I just had to sit in a room and do what I did. But it's like Harula had to like orchestrate these 30 people to make it happen. You know, I don't know, maybe more than 30, but to like get everybody along. And then she had to deal with me, you know, and be worried about what I might think. But,
oh, well, come on. That was so fun. It was like you created a world that made David and I and other people on the team very obsessed. So, you know, it's sort of, it's all on you, really.
It all started there, that's for sure.
I know, and then the fact that now there's music, and one of the great joys of my life was to get to go with Harula and David to the Bluebird Cafe in Nashville and hear famous, you know, Grammy Award-winning music people singing songs about a fictional character that I invented.
That was fun.
Speaking of music, the song at the end, that's you, Harula, right?
Yeah. I wrote that with two friends, the composer Zach Ray and my friend Peter Adams. They both are just amazing musicians, and we got together, and I don't know, it just felt like it needed to be a woman's voice at the end, and mm-hmm. I was like, well, I'm not gonna charge myself, so
I didn't necessarily, I just wanted to comp. I as I was watching the film before I knew that was you, I just, in my notes, I just wrote song at the end and I underlined it for no reason other than I loved it so much.
Oh, don't make me cry when I hear it.
Well, what's funny is Harula, our working relationship, I mean, we've been working together on various things for probably like, I don't know, 10 years now. And, our relationship began with, you know, with music and Harula is a recording artist. And then, I mean, I've always known right from the beginning that she was interested in film, and our relationship developed from there. So, you know, it's for me, the shift from Harula the musician to Harula the filmmaker is, you know, that's the, well, it's not odd, but it's, you know, it's been really great to see, but, you know, that's mostly how I know Harula, though, is as a musician.
I'm still doing music. I am. But I just,
no, I know. I know. You're recording an album right now.
Yeah.
She's in Nashville recording an album like right now with one of the guys from Band of Horses. So she's I'll brag on her. She's an incredibly gifted, as gifted a filmmaker as she is. She's that gifted as a musician and a singer and a songwriter. So she's a now if you could just dance like Ann Miller, then I think that would be like a triple threat type thing or something.
Yeah, and when you make that music, you don't have to quite have as many people that you're keeping track of when you're doing it.
And to be honest with you, you could dance better than I'm aware of. You know, maybe you can dance really well. I don't know.
We don't even talk about my two left feet. Thank you.
Before we start wrapping up here, I have a couple questions. One is just a curious question. Josephine Decker as Joanna.
Oh, yeah.
I saw that you're thanked on Madeline, or at the Michigan Theater. We're big fans of Josephine Decker. So I'm just curious what your relationship is with Josephine Decker.
She is a dear friend of mine and a supporter of my work, and it's mutual. So like, she's shown me cuts of her film and I gave her some notes on Madeline. And then when this role came up, I thought she has this intensity about her at all times. I mean, she's also like hilarious and so sweet and so joyful, but she has this like bubbling intensity that she can access just like that. And so Joanna to me always felt like such a deeply repressed, sad character. And I feel like Josephine is she's great. Like who can pull that off in such a short amount of time? So I just asked her if she was free, and she was, and she came out and stayed with me for a couple of days and did those scenes. And that's another one. I really loved the Aunt Joanna scenes. I really wanted more Aunt Joanna scenes, but it was really hard. Like the first cut of this film was way too long. And you know, your editor is your final co-writer. And I just remember like paring it down and getting it to that essence that we were talking about before. Like, what is the very essence of the book? What is the message? What are we saying? And how do we lose all this other extraneous stuff? And it sucks that you have to lose some things like that, but she's amazing still, even though she's in it for a short amount of time. Yeah. She still has that like intensity, which I thought worked.
Absolutely. And I think the question I'll leave us on, Bonnie, Once Upon a River is considered, it's a prequel to your novel Q Road. Has there been any discussion between you and Harula of adapting it, whether it's Q Road or something else? Is this the beginning of a creative partnership?
Yeah. Harula and I are all going to work together on something. I'm not sure what. I'd love it if she made Q Road, but she may not want to make the same, you know, of course it wouldn't be the same movie. It would be something different. And, but we're talking about maybe adapting some short stories possibly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And, but yeah, I hope Harula, I know I'm trying to write real good for my next novel, so Harula will be interested. Okay. It's about a girl and her grandmother in the swamp. So.
Oh, got it.
I'm writing it for you.
All right. I'm in. I love how you throw that in earlier, P.S., that you just threw it in there, that you're like, oh, I traveled with the circus for a while.
You know, a girl's got to do things when she's young. It's funny, I was late back getting back to University of Chicago. I was late because I'd traveled with the circus all summer. So I had to go, you know, talk to those straight-laced people in those offices and explain why I was late getting back.
That's amazing. You got to write that one too.
I second that. Yeah, I'd love to hear more about I feel like that's an entirely different interview is talking about your time in the circus.
Yeah. Okay, Harula, we'll do some circus stories. I can see a bunch of short circus stories we could write.
I'm totally no problem.
We'll be back. We'll be back at the Michigan Theater.
Absolutely. Theater. Yeah. Whenever you're around, we'd love to host you. So thank you so much for joining me for this discussion. I don't know if it's going to show up in the background. There it is.
Oh, yay.
It's there. That's the book.
Yeah, I see it.
I want to thank Nicolo's Books personally on this recording for setting us up with Bonnie, and then Bonnie for setting us up with David and Harula. Be sure to find this book at Nicolo's. There it is. It's something. It's in there.
But, I love how it's like fading away. It's like the movie's been made. The book is just fading away.
No.
Go buy it.
So thank you everyone that joined us watching this discussion, and have a terrific rest of your weekend. And thank you.
Great. Thank you, Nick.
David and Bonnie, it was so good to see you. And Nick, thanks so much for having us.
Absolutely. Yay! Thank you.
And David, yay.
Bye.
All right, as I said at the top, and as you could probably tell, that conversation was so much fun. Thank you to Bonnie, Harula, and David once again for giving me their time. If you want to be a part of more live Q&As such as that one, be sure to follow the Michigan and State Theater on Facebook. While you're at it, give us your attention on Twitter and Instagram as well. Those handles are at Michigan Theater and at State Theater A2. And of course, over at the State, theater is spelled with an R-E. We don't have any Q&A scheduled at this moment, but there are sure to be more that come up. And plus, every Friday at 3 p.m., myself and my colleagues Sarah Escalante and Finn Pooler, we host sort of mini episodes on Facebook Live that you can join in as well. Thank you once again to Nicholas Books for setting this conversation up. If you'd like to read Once Upon a River, you can find it there. I suggest you do. Or you can find it at the Ann Arbor District Library, who I'd like to thank once again for hosting our podcast on Apple iTunes. If you have not already, be sure to subscribe and give us a rating, as that will be how we pick up more listeners. Thank you, Matt, of course, for making sure these episodes drop on a timely basis. If you want to get a hold of the podcast, send us an email at btmpod@gmail.com. Be sure to check out the virtual movie palace at mitchtheater.org/screenings. And as I said, we are open now. We are open for business, and we got some really great stuff coming up. If you're listening to this on the day it comes out, October 16th, come visit the Michigan Theater this Sunday. We're playing Empire Strikes Back, one of my favorite movies of all time, so I will be introducing it. And then we got some really great spooky season stuff coming up. Psycho, Beetlejuice, Halloween, Nosferatu is back October 30th with live organ from head organist Andrew Rogers. So excited that we were able to continue that tradition this year. So I'm psyched. I hope you are as well. Hocus Pocus on Halloween, October 31st. And then A Nightmare Before Christmas on Sunday. I am so thrilled that we're able to continue spooky season at the Michigan. It's one of my favorite times of the year. So come give us a visit. But before you come to the theater, please check out our COVID safety precautions at michtheater.org/COVID-safety. That's where you will find all the information. Please visit it before you come to the theater so you won't be surprised, I suppose, at the precautions that we're taking. We're doing everything we can to make sure our theater is as safe as possible. All right, that's enough. We'll be back in your feed very soon. Thank you for listening and joining us behind the marquee.